patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So a pretty cool story for all the Canadian baseball followers out there, right? Of course, the WBC just played. Team Canada had a decent run, a decent showing, winning 2 of 4 games in their division, not advancing, but definitely put some of the young talent on a pedestal for us all to kind of check out what's coming up the Canadian pipeline. Some of you may remember the name Edouard Julien from Quebec. François, Français, Le Français. But he made his...
Let's start over. All right, let's keep going. That was great. Francois, yeah. Let's go, Francophone. Here we go. Edouard Julien.
According to the Canadian government, I am bilingual, by the way. So,
Hold on. Before we even get to this, because you just reminded me of this, Ricky Tiedemann had his debut last night.
Yes, he did.
3 innings pitched, 9 strikeouts.
Yeah.
He's doing nothing to calm the fever of Blue Jays fans calling to get him up. You, in our text chain, shared this with Joel and I, and I think meant to say the general consensus.
Yes.
But it auto-corrected to federal consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that so much. So the federal consensus is Ricky Tiedemann needs to be called up. Very Canadian federal consensus. All right, continue back to the Francophone, Edouard Julien.
I put that so adequately.
So adequately put.
Yeah, Edouard Julien out of Quebec. Le Francophone. Made his debut with the Minnesota Twins yesterday in New York and looked incredible. What a debut. A single and a home run in the same inning in the first. That is how he started his major league debut.
Very, I would have retired cool. Right there.
Honestly, just a big tip of the hat to a Canadian kid who has made his way up through the pipeline, has been a big part of the national team throughout his teens and into his early 20s. All the best to him, especially the fact that he's playing in an AL Central team and gives us a chance to actually cheer for him rather than if he was, God forbid, a Red Sox or a Yankee, right?
Absolutely.
Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. All sorts of stuff to talk about today. That brutal loss yesterday, the Blue Jays making it tough on themselves in that series finale against the Tigers. New bullpens. There is all sorts of talk about the heckling that is going on and whether it is acceptable or unacceptable. We will get into it and feel free to drop your comments while we're talking about it, because I'd love to tackle this in mailbag and see what you folks, the grounds crew, feel about it. Week 3, we will preview the Rays series and get into the upcoming Astros series next week. Stolen bases. Oh, baby, you look at the numbers. They are back. We will go over some of the stats. Expansion. Major League Baseball wants their expansion money. They're going to get it. But where is the team going? We'll throw out some options. And then Bryce Harper approaching. Dave Dombrowski, general manager of the Phillies, saying, hey, I know I just had Tommy John surgery, but what do you think about me coming back early and playing first base? Which is very interesting. Big show ahead. Let's get into it with starting on a negative, I guess, which is last night's loss. Before we even talk the loss and Chris Bassitt, something really interesting happened in, I think it was the second inning. Maybe it was the third. Either way, Javi Baez. The whole scenario, in my opinion, was an example of how to handle a negative situation with your team by AJ Hinch. Manager of the Tigers was about as professional as you could possibly be. So this is what went down. Javi Baez hit a double off the top of the wall. Now, to start with, he admired it all the way until it hit the top of the fence. It probably should have been a triple. In fact, it almost guaranteed was a triple. So he dogged it into second base. Then he lost track of how many outs there was. He thought there were two outs. There was only one. So he was running on contact, wound up getting thrown out as he was rounding third base by Dalton Varsho, who caught the fly ball and just lobbed it back into Bichette to tag second for the out. So not only did he dog it out of the batter's box, mental brain fart as to where the Tigers were in the game, where they were in the inning, and the fact he literally cost them a run because he should have been on third base had he hustled out of the batter's box to begin with. He could have tagged and scored a run. Of course, not knowing what out it is, who knows? He may have just trotted in without even tagging up. But AJ Hinch, man, after watching what happened with Tyler O'Neill of the St. Louis Cardinals, right? And basically, he was called out by
a public undressing
by his manager, Marmol, in St. Louis. Just, and if you look at the replay, it didn't feel like he was dogging it as much as maybe Marmol made it out to be, but he did make a huge public display of it. Now, AJ Hinch on the other side, this is a dude who is known for his player development skills, his ability to connect with players in the clubhouse. He obviously has that World Series ring with the Astros. Whether there's an asterisk next to it or not, he has it. He took Javi Baez aside, their most high-paid, high-profile player on a very young Tigers team, a team that's 3-8, by the way. He pulled him from the game, but he did so by bringing him out of the dugout back into the clubhouse. Obviously, told him this is completely unacceptable. You're out of the lineup. But he didn't make a big deal about it. And then even afterwards in the press conference, when he was pressed about it, talked about it, he said, listen, Javi knows what he did. Mental lapse. He'll be back in there next game. Right? Like this is the dude who is the highest paid player on the team. And you shouldn't have exceptions for that when you're trying to create a culture with young players. I just loved the way it was handled.
Yeah. Not much else to say on my part. Javi Baez, 6-year, $140 million contract with the Tigers last offseason, has not looked worth it since then. Hit .238 last season. Hitting like five for 40 right now. It's he's having a hard go of it.
He looks checked out, dude. Like when the Tigers went out and signed him, most of you will remember everyone was talking about the Tigers like folks are talking about the Orioles right now. Like the Tigers are about ready to take a step forward. They brought in Javi, signed him for big money, and it just fell apart on them. Yeah. Some injuries last year with pitching didn't help. And then basically when they saw the trajectory of the team, they scaled back and went into full rebuild mode again. It makes you wonder if maybe a change in scenery, like with so few great shortstops available, Javi Baez is a good shortstop.
Well, I mean, I was kind of hoping the Jays would go.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of the names that I thought, yeah, that'd be a guy worth going after. Yeah, I don't know. Let's just talk broader Jays Tigers recap, though. We've spent enough time on Javi Baez. Unless you have anything else you want to really sink your teeth
into.
We
can move in. Obviously, the bats didn't show up is the big thing with yesterday. A 3-1 loss. This Jays team, of the six games they have won, or eight games they have won, have come from behind six times. They keep putting themselves in precarious spots and really making it so that they need to do some late inning heroics to pull it out.
Can we start with Chris Bassitt in his performance yesterday? Because we went into last night's game with pretty clear-cut expectations of what we wanted from him.
And he delivered, man. Chris Bassett looked
That's what
really
I wanted
good.
To ask you was, are you happy with what we got out of him? We got, what, six innings pitched?
Two earned runs, four hits, three walks, seven strikeouts, 107 pitches. That is what I want out of Chris Bassett every single time he takes the mound.
Yeah, I mean, that feels like exactly, I mean, wasn't like thrilled with it, but that's what I want out of him. Disappointed
he got
the bats
into some
couldn't
trouble.
Have supported him a little bit more. 107 pitches. Give me that. I would have liked to see him go into the seventh inning, but that's also, I feel like, maybe an ambitious outing to hope that he's going through seven, especially with the way MLB is nowadays. Seven innings is a really good game. So, but it was the Tigers. I don't know. I'm bummed out.
It was the Tigers.
We're going into a hard stretch here. I mean, we'll touch on the week three preview later, but I wanted more. I wanted the sweep. I know the sweep is a tall task, but
I mean, you're not alone. I think Jays Nation in general wanted the sweep, obviously. And it was a very winnable game. I think that's what's frustrating about it. At no point did either team really feel like they were going to take it. You know, even in the ninth, I was like, are the Jays going to come back again? Like, it's not like the Tigers ever really had their foot on the throat of the Blue Jays. It just was one of those little whimper games that the whole time, I don't know, man. I it wasn't a fun game to watch personally. I didn't think it stood out as anything other than something to be forgotten about. Listen, it's April 12th. There's going to be these sort of games. You can't dwell on an April 12th loss to the Tigers.
You can, and I'm going to.
Well, no, the fans can, but as the team, they should just move on. There's some real competition coming to town right now.
We always talk about taking care of business against the bad teams. Tampa Bay Rays are 13-0. When they played the Tigers, it was a sweep. That's how you get to stay undefeated, as you sweep teams.
Sweep everybody, yes.
When they faced off against Spencer Turnbull, seven earned runs through 2 2/3 innings.
I mean, Turnbull went into the game yesterday with a ERA above 13. So he has been roughed up in his two previous starts.
Right. Based on that.
Yes.
Against the Rays. So it was disappointing that the Jays could do nothing. I don't
know. I'm going to be those games.
Not okay with it. Matt Chapman was out for a second game in a row. Santiago Espinal at third base.
Now,
is nothing to be worried about? This is an illness.
Chappie was playing DH the game before in the second game of the series there. So he wasn't completely out. I think it's just a virus. I don't think there's really anything to worry about there. It is a bummer when a guy's bat is as hot as Matt Chapman to need to take a day off. But, you know, we've all been there, head in a bucket. It's not pleasant. So hopefully Chappie's feeling better today. That's the thing with the flu. It kind of sucks because even if he is playing today, he's probably not 100%, right? Like, it's like going back to work after missing one day and you're just like, I still shouldn't be here.
I mean, what do you think of Espinal at third base? Is this anything?
Yeah, he looked good.
Looked all right?
He looked good. You know what I saw on Twitter today? I wish I could remember the handle, but it doesn't matter. Basically, it was Santiago Espinal equals Ryan Goins. And I was like, that's a very apt comparison. Just a good defensive player. You can kind of move around the diamond. Probably will have a big moment here and there, but probably not an everyday player.
So adequately put. All right, let's talk.
I'm done talking this game. Should we just move on?
Let's move on to the bullpen. New bullpen arrangements at the Rogers Center, because this is can we even call it an incident?
So for those of you who missed it, the very first game, there was some excitement around the Rays bullpen. Two things happened. Number one,
Tigers bullpen, but yes.
Yes, Tigers bullpen. Now, number one, there was talk of a beer being thrown in there. This is not what happened. The whole thing was an accident. It's why nobody was thrown out of it. Somebody had their beer along the edge of the bullpen. Somebody behind them spilled beer down their back. They stood up and knocked it into the bullpen.
Hilarity ensues.
Exactly. And as soon as security came down to talk to the guy, he shows him the back of his jacket all covered in beer and was like, "I'm so sorry." And they were like, "Okay." The other incident was written about in Jay's journal.
Hold on. Sorry. This is a teachable moment. If you're going to throw a beer at someone, buy two and pour one on yourself first, right?
Very adequately said.
All right. Let's get to the bigger incident that is.
The bigger incident, if it's a non-incident, I guess, depending on how you view this. But there was a fan who wound up getting in the face of what was his name? Steve, one of the Tigers relievers anyways. And by getting in his face, he sort of kind of leaned over the railing, yelled something at him, and then it was made a big deal.
It was pretty aggressive yelling and pointing. It was great to see. I loved it.
Yes, it was aggressive. There was an article written about it in Jay's journal talking about how embarrassing it was, what a black eye to the Toronto fan base it is. Don't be like this guy. And I am curious what everyone's thoughts on this is, because Mark Shapiro obviously feels this is just fine. He stated it very clearly when talking about these raised bullpen. And the idea of making it an uncomfortable place to play for opposing teams. He mentioned the fan interaction that will be on display with there being no real barrier between the fan base and that bullpen, the opposing bullpen. And you saw it firsthand there. Now, the guy wasn't kicked out. He didn't swear. There were kids around and he kept it clean. He probably was a little aggressive with his hand gestures, if that's something you really wish to,
He didn't swat about at him. There was
no
Shreve was never in danger. Like, it was aggressive pointing and probably saying "you suck" or "you're going to choke" or something like that. I mean, kudos to Shreve for not losing his cool and just ignoring it. That's absolutely what you got to do. I mean, this got brought up on the home season opener at home. It kind of put me back when I was watching Jamie Campbell and Joe Siddle talk about these new bullpen arrangements here and all the new features of the renovations. Jamie Campbell was like saying during the broadcast, like, remember, like, we should all behave. Remember, we're Canadians after all. Let's be polite. And it was off-putting to me. I was like, what? That's not like, we're also hockey fans here. Like, we should be again. And the way like Shapiro and Atkins have talked about the renovations, like, this is the whole point of the bullpens where they are, right? Is for that level of interaction. If we wanted to just eliminate heckling, we would put a roof over the bullpen. Like,
I mean, if you look at
zero issue with what happened, loved it. Too. I want to see absolutely more of it.
And my stance on heckling is that if it's funny, it's fine.
Yes.
Literally. If you get a laugh, boom, it's good. Like last night at the end of the game, Alex Lang came in to pitch for the Tigers, and he was wearing his little turtleneck, right? His neck was cold. Oh, it was so chilly in Toronto. He needs his little turtleneck. And the fan base was so funny, man. While he was warming up, they were constantly yelling about the turtleneck, right? You know? And then when he came out onto the mound, it caught on so much that people were literally chanting, "Turtleneck, turtleneck. This is the sort of heckling you gotta love, man.
Yeah.
That's what I'm after. And do some research. Look into it. Put some effort in, right? Look up the guy's worst ERA in what year he did it, right? Remind him of the year. Be like, hopefully you don't get in the same mental space as you did when you were pitching to a six ERA back in 2018 with the Mariners, right? Don't think about that. Don't think about that.
Deep dive his Facebook, find that high school crush that never went out with him and start chanting, Rebecca, Rebecca. Let's do this. Yeah, I mean, don't throw beers, don't throw batteries. Let's keep it clean. But yeah, I want to see more of this. I want all of those bullpens super uncomfortable. Not like scared for their life or their personal safety, but that's what the security and the police officers are there for. Like, I don't know. There was a officer standing right there in the bullpen. He clearly couldn't have been so aggressive that there was a concern for safety, or else somebody would have stepped in. Like, he wasn't, I don't know. Again, if they wanted to eliminate that, you'd have a higher wall around the bullpen.
Yeah.
Like, so it's a 3-foot, 4-foot little plexiglass thing. Like, it's designed for those moments. It's exactly, designed for that.
Exactly.
So, especially for anybody who's like, wants to pick on this guy who was doing it, like, that's not on him. That's, by designing it that way, it's an invitation for fans to do that. All off season, that's been the public narrative, is that, yeah, fans are going to get in the faces and fans are going to be right on top of this bullpen. Like, what else can you expect? Again, unless he said something like that crossed a line and whatever, draw that line in the sand wherever it means for you. But for me, pointing and yelling and whatever, like, that's fine. Bring it on.
I couldn't agree more. So I tweeted about this yesterday, and basically I just said, I love the new bullpen set up at Rogers. Let's make Toronto an incredibly uncomfortable place to play ball. And remember, heckling isn't embarrassing unless it's not funny. Those are the rules. And you know, a lot of people agreed, a lot of people tweeted out, and I love the interaction on Twitter. It's why it's my favorite social media platform. But I did get a response that said, the mouthpiece who accosted Shreve should be ejected. This kind of assault is totally offensive, which is, in my opinion, incredibly offensive to people who were actually accosted or assaulted in their life. Like, my goodness, can we reel it the freak in a little bit here? Like, yeah. I'm not saying go out and heckle and be a complete piece of shit. All right. Like, don't throw stuff. Don't assault anyone. If there's kids around, use your head.
I swear, yeah.
You know, be creative. But there is no doubt it was set up to do just this. Like you said, man, this was designed this way. This wasn't like Rogers being like, oh, whoopsie. We didn't see this coming. Oh, my. You know?
No, couldn't agree more. Tip of the cap to that fellow who was heckling. I want to see more of it. Again, I think that was the perfect amount. The only way that would be better is if there was more people standing with that guy also doing it.
Yes.
Right? We don't need any objects being thrown. We don't need any more aggressive language, but give me a whole wall of people pointing and yelling and making them feel uncomfortable as they're entering the game. Give me more of that. I want it.
Drop your comments. Would love to hear what you folks think. I already know this is going to be a topic on Mailbag. So what do you think about heckling the new bullpens at Rogers Center? Where is your line? Are we being ridiculous here? Should professional athletes be carried out on a pillow while everyone tells them how great they are? These are the questions we're asking here.
Absolutely. All right, before we move on to our week three preview, it's time for our newest segment of the show.
Yes!
Three studs, one dud. Here's the list. Coming in at number three.
On the stud list.
On the stud list. There's only one dud, fellas, ladies, gentlemen, everyone in between. Number three on the stud list, Kevin Gausman. Only one outing is stood in his way of being higher on this list. Gave us exactly what we needed, eight innings. Yeah, what else is there to say about Kevin Gausman? He's number three on the list. Number two on the list, Kevin Kiermaier.
Love it.
Hit 333 in the past 7 days. Had that home run.
Just hit 333 in the nine hole.
Had that home run robbing catch out in center field there.
The home run that followed it in that game.
By the way, I'm loving this new home run celebration that they're doing where after a guy hits a home run, the next guy hits a home run.
Yes.
That's the best home run celebration. Let's just do that more. Okay. Back to back jacks all season long. No, Kevin Kiermaier is our number two stud of the week. And in at number one is Matt Chapman.
Tough to argue.
563. He's nine hits and 16 at bats in the last 7 days. Like, he had a great week one, and somehow week two was even better. So,
what I love about this list too is that Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is hitting 430 and has 22 hits on the season, did not make the cut.
Well, he was only hitting 400 this week. So,
yeah, that's the thing. It's three studs and a dud, not four studs.
Honorable mention to Vladdy for sure. Bo Bichette also had himself a heck of a week. Two home runs this week. Zero errors. Impressive stat line there. Let's get to the dud. The one dud this week. Cavan Biggio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, bit of a bummer there. He had one hit in 11 at-bats. However, he also had six strikeouts, zero walks. That's not what we need from Kevin
Biggio. That is not the Kevin Biggio we need, no.
So Kevin Biggio, batting average, 0.91 in the last 7 games, or in the last 7 days. Kevin.
That is going to get Santiago Espinosa some at-bats.
Well, not if Santiago goes 0-13 like he did in the last 7 days, so.
Which is why we're seeing a lot of Whit Merrifield in the lineup.
Exactly. All right, there it is. This week's week two studs and a dud in the books. Now, let's move on to our week three preview, shall we?
The undefeated Tampa Bay Rays make their way to Toronto. This is their first real test, is playing the Toronto Blue Jays. This is the first team that is projected as a playoff team that they're playing, or even a team that should finish above 500 in the Jays. Now, the Rays are the fourth team in Major League Baseball history to start with a 13-0 win streak. And they're the first since 1987 when the Brewers did it. So I've got a few Rays stats here just to kind of spin around the brain before we get to the meat of this week three preview. The Rays have trailed. This one blew my freaking mind. The Rays have trailed at the end of just six of 117 innings this season. Wow. They're the third team in history to do this, and the first one since 1884. Wow. Like, give me a break. They have trailed in six innings out of 117. No wonders they're 13-0, man.
Yeah.
The Rays boast a hefty 71 run differential. That's the third highest by a team in its first 13 games of a season in MLB history. And again, the first since 1893. Like, the Rays are doing things right now that hasn't been done in baseball in 140 years. What?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I hate it. You got to hate it.
Good start.
So,
what are your expectations for this matchup?
I want to see the Jays win too. I really do. I want to see them get one for sure. I do expect the Jays to break this win streak personally. I don't think the Rays are going to go 16-0. Famous last words. But you look at the pitching matchup, advantage Tampa Bay.
Okay, so here's the pitching matchups for these three games. By the way, in our last little stretch here, the Royals, the Angels, the Tigers, we went 7-3. That's not what's going to happen this week. We got the Rays, and then we're off to Houston against the Astros. We got two doses of Jose Berríos in week three. So that's as bad of omen as there can be, I think. So let's go game by game here against the Rays. We got Berríos versus Rasmussen, and we got Kikuchi versus Fleming. And then when we've got Manoa on the bump, the Rays have McClanahan. So funny thing. Well, not funny, haha, funny, sad. Rays are favorites in all three matchups here. So we've got the ESPN matchup predictor up. 67.4% that the Rays win in game one.
And listen, let's stop for 1 second because I do wish to touch on Drew Rasmussen and the season he is having. He's got a zero ERA in his first 16 innings pitched. Yes, he has gone 8 innings twice. He has 15 Ks. He's got a whip of 0.23. The dude is dialed in. Now, there were signs of this sort of pitcher in him last year, but Drew Rasmussen is this year's Jeffrey Springs, who looked like an ace for the Rays last year, who was the year before's Shane McClanahan, who is currently their ace, who was Tyler Glasnow the year before. Like, the Rays just once a year find a guy who could be an ace on almost any other staff, and they're up to the point now where, you know, like, Drew Rasmussen is their number four in their rotation.
I mean,
if hasn't allowed a run.
If you had to do a preseason predictor and you're saying, look, 15 days into the season, what's the bigger number, Drew Rasmussen innings pitched or Jose Berríos ERA? You'd probably say innings pitched for Rasmussen. And the good news is you'd be right. The bad news is it's close. It's 13-11. that's not so good. All right. Jose Berríos. Yeah. What can I say? So Rays are favored in all three matchups. Even the Alec Manoa start, again, they got Shane McClanahan on the bump. Yusei Kikuchi, according to ESPN, that matchup against Josh Fleming is the Blue Jays' best chance at victory at 47.2%. Spoiler alert, our best chance at victory all week long, according to the ESPN predictor. 47.2%, that is our best chance of victory across the Rays and Astros series. So we're in for a tough one. We're in for a tough one, Scott. I don't feel good about this.
Baseball is a funny little game, is really the only thing I can say about this. It's impossible to write the Blue Jays off. The team is a good team. And if they can put up some runs, I think a win or two is 100% doable against the Rays. This is a team they're going to need to beat throughout the season. And this is a team where, with playing them 14 times, it's going to matter, the record. As you can look at the AL East, you can already tell that it is going to be a dogfight right to the end. And these interdivisional matchups are going to matter. And when I say it's going to matter, I mean at the end of the year, when the dust has settled and we're looking at who's playing in the wild card, who won the division, there could even be a tiebreaker scenario where there are three AL East teams that could be in the playoffs, and it comes down to whether the Jays won more games against the Rays or not. Like, this is how tight and how little of a little room there is for error.
And I want to remind myself to buckle up. This could be a 1-5, 0-6 stretch.
Could be. I don't think it will be. Personally, I think this team goes 3-3 in the next six games.
Oh, if they go, honestly, if they go 3-3, I'm going to be ecstatic, Scott. Two of those games coming from our good pitchers, four of those games coming from elsewhere. That's a nice way of putting it. I'm not looking forward to either of these series. Those Rays are so.
This is what makes.
We have to have Barrios twice in the same week.
This is what makes good teams.
What do you think? How many innings do we get out of Barrios tonight?
I'm predicting 7 innings and Barrios takes the win.
Whoa. I hope you're right. I'm hoping for a lot of offense out of our team today.
Forget today, this week. The bats need to be alive. We cannot see the bats do what they have done the last two games against the Tigers.
Barrios.
5 runs over two games against the Tigers just isn't enough. And I mean, the Blue Jays didn't even get 3 of those runs until the 9th and 10th inning of Wednesday's game. So the bats are going to make or break these next two series.
So Jose Barrios, 4 innings in his first outing, 5 2/3 in his second outing, but gave up 8 earned runs against the Kansas City Royals. If he pitches a single pitch in the 4th inning tonight, I'll be ecstatic. But I'm terrified. I'm terrified for Jose Barrios. Hopefully the bats wake up. Hopefully Matt Chapman has recovered from his illness. We're going to need him tonight. Anything else to add on this week 3 preview? Astros, how do you feel about going down to Houston, Scott? World Series champions defending.
Listen, the Astros are always a good team. You can never write the Astros off. Going there with Gausman pitching game 1, I honestly really do believe that the Blue Jays, this is the first major test of the year for them. You're going to see where they're at as a team. You need to play good teams. This is how you get into the playoffs. And if they can continue to keep their head above water here, the 8-5 Jays, if after these 6 games are 11-8, I'm happy.
Yeah, if we're 11-8,
I know you're ecstatic, but I really think that 3-3 is not an unreasonable expectation, and that's the low watermark, in my opinion. You are right. As Jays fans, we should maybe be ready to be talking about a 1-5 stretch here. But the game's got to be played.
The game's got to be
played. It's not like this team isn't a good team. This Jays team, it wouldn't shock the baseball world if the Jays go 3-3 here by any means.
All right. Let's look ahead at stolen bases. Are up in Major League Baseball.
Stolen bases are up big time. Okay, so here are some stats for you. Through the first 13 days of the season, they are up 48% from last year. And stolen base attempts through the same period are up 34%. So teams are running more and they're successful more. So if this keeps up, just doing the math, we'll see close to 1,200 more stolen bases this season than last year.
It's good. Good for baseball.
It's good for baseball.
The entertainment value, for sure.
It's good for the fans, and it does exactly what Theo Epstein and the MLB brass was hoping, which is create more plays on the field, create more excitement when it's not a home run, create more runs. All of this is taking place right now. Now, here's some interesting stuff to kind of think about here, because yes, stolen bases are way up, but it's not even close to the 80s yet. So the rate of 2023 stolen bases is 1.4 per game per team, which is the most since 1999. 24 years since we've seen this kind of stolen base rate. You know, the late 90s hit, the steroid era hit, and it became home run, strikeout. And it's kind of been that way in baseball since. And it's one of the reasons why we saw all these rule changes, is to try and diversify the game a little bit. The frequency of stolen base attempts was 1.7 per game right now in 2023. In the 80s, which is the most since 2012. In the 80s, it was ratcheted up another 41%. Baseball is still adjusting, though, Adam. And that is my question to you, is as we watch these teams succeed more with stolen bases, can you see speed and stolen bases becoming the crux of some teams, the backbone of some teams, you know, where this is the game they're playing, stealing that extra 90 feet? Or do you think it's always just going to be a complementary side of the game?
No, I can see it
I
being
probably
a
worded
way,
that question bad, but
yeah, very adequately put. I can see it being that way for teams like the Rays, for teams like the Pirates, for teams like the Reds, for teams that don't have money invested in their players at all. I don't see it being a thing with the Dodgers or the Yankees or even the Blue Jays are running aggressively. I still defer to the fact that, like, it's just another chance to get hurt. Do I really want Bo Bichette stealing second base when Vladdy's about to potentially hit a two-run shot? Like, there's just... I mean, the argument is, well, if he's on second instead of first, now a double scores him, right? But... we don't need to be running into outs is the expression, right? And as much as I love small ball, I mean, we talked about this the other day. I love bunting. I love stolen bases. I think it's great for baseball. I just also think it's an expensive venture to go down that road of having your Mike Trout on the injured list because he was trying to steal when Shohei Ohtani was up to bat anyways. Like, there's just
Mike Trout is such a great example. I know this is the example you kind of lean on heavily, but in his early career, Mike Trout stole, it was something ridiculous, right? What was it, Adam? If you can, I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
No. I have it pulled up because I'm all ready to go here. And as that long sentence leads me and buys me time. And
that is why
numbers.
You're the best co-host in the biz. That's right.
So in his first full season in Major League Baseball, 49 stolen bases, led the American League. Since 2020, 4 total stolen bases.
He's just not running, and he could.
He absolutely has the skill set to run and steal bases. He has done it. He has led the league in stolen base attempts. This is a guy does have a bit of a mounting injury history. I know he has that weird back condition, and that's a factor too. But also, it's like stealing a base is like, other than those weird opportunities where a pitcher just has like no move, or he's burned both of his pickoff attempts, or like in weird situations where there is just going to be no throw down or whatever. Other than that, it's like the most violent running that a player can do at any point in a game, right? Maybe like an infield hit in a close one. They're running down to first pretty hard, but we're talking max effort for 90 feet and then a lot of opportunity for jamming a thumb, pulling a hammy,
Mm-hmm.
I just mean, if we're talking about having your nine-figure contract guys, why would you even risk, like, for an extra base, just the chance that, well, do we need the extra base now, or do we need Mike Trout's bat every game for the next 6 weeks? Because that's the trade. That's the calculation. So for me, it's going to be teams like the Rays that just don't have big contracts on the line.
And they're prepared to risk the injuries because none of their players are worth any money.
That's the thing, right? Is like, even if it costs them wins by having Randy or Rosarena on the IL versus the stolen bases, at least they're not also paying him $6 million over that time frame to do nothing and rehab. I don't know. So yeah, I would say teams like the Rays, the low payroll teams, are the most likely to do it. The younger players, I know we're seeing like Corbin Carroll run a bunch for the Diamondbacks. I think, again, that's another great example. But once he pushes a payday, once he gets a payday, there's no more running allowed. Like it's going to come from up high, and managers are going to get the notice that, like, hey, no more running for Corbin Carroll. What is this? We need him to hit 335 home runs. We do not need him to steal 45 times. So
the success rate,
I don't know how you fix that either, by the way.
I don't think you do. I think it's just the business of baseball. The success rate, though, did stand out to me. The current success rate of stolen bases is sitting at 81.3%. Last year, it was 73.3%. So it is, the success rate is up 8%. Do you just chalk that up to the bigger bases and the disengagement rules?
As opposed to what?
I don't know. Seems like it's a fairly significant increase in the success rate. And I was just curious if you had any thoughts on why that was outside of just the rules are working.
No, I mean, every stolen base that you see, like if a guy is stealing, it's because he thinks I have a chance to get it, right? Like at the major league level, there aren't guys who are going for it who don't think they have a good chance of getting it. So we've just taken that good chance and we've eliminated all of the bang bang plays where a guy for the last decade or longer has been just not quite there. Mm-hmm. And we've made that path 12 inches shorter. So like, of course, now every tie goes to the runner situation is no, the runner is not tagged out by 5 inches. He's in there by 7 inches or whatever, you know? So it's, I think the disengagements might be a factor in why steals are up, but I think the bigger bases, which again shaves off whatever it is, 6 or 12 inches between the white, like it's shortened that. That's massive for the success rate. Entirely is up to that, I think. Although I don't know, maybe the disengagements allows the guy to get a better jump. I don't know.
I think it's a little of all of that, though, but I do agree with you. I do wonder if... What I'm really wondering, man, and what I'm really curious to see is how much running happens in the playoffs. Like, what are the playoffs with these new rules going to look like? How aggressive are teams going to be? Right? Because we're seeing teams like the Blue Jays, even the Yankees, be far more aggressive than we have seen in previous seasons. But is this just testing the waters? Is this why we're seeing such a huge jump at the beginning of the season? Is this going to settle down once they kind of figure out the ins and outs and how often, and have a real sample size of analytics to go along with this? I'm just a curious cat when it comes to the playoffs and how it's going to look, man.
Well, here's one thing for playoff baseball is that's when the wins matter more than anything, right? So
that 90 feet means a lot then.
Yeah.
But so does that out. So does running into an out.
Right. But I would also say that if a guy's going to miss time injured, he might as well do it in the off season when he's not getting paid. Mm-hmm. Right. Like if I need a win, Am I going to risk sending George Springer? You got the green light, man. Like, if you jam your thumb, well, I'll send you a card while you're rehabbing in November, but I'm not paying for you. Right. So the downside of it is reduced just in terms from like an economic standpoint, and the upside of needing it is elevated. So I would say, yeah, we might see like a lot of stealing in the playoffs if that's the case. That's a good point, Scott. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the playoffs. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but.
And it will be interesting to see if those speedsters, those base stealers that maybe are really their biggest value is pinch running. How many of those guys kind of get snagged up at the trade deadline? I bet you there are far more of them grabbed than in previous seasons. All right, drop your comments below. Would love to hear what you think about the increased stolen bases and what the playoffs could look. And if we are going to see teams be aggressive.
Before we move on to expansion teams, just while we're talking interesting statistical things that are interesting, Aaron Judge, 4 home runs, off to a good start as far as home runs goes, also leads Major League Baseball with strikeouts with 19. Doesn't even matter. His batting average is .298.
No.
But he's got a lot of strikeouts.
Listen, then, when it comes to a guy who profiles like Judge, where he's hitting for power and hitting for average, who cares how his outs are? The fact that he's not hitting ground balls for the rest of his outs and isn't a double play risk, I'm fine with a guy like Aaron Judge striking out that much. I know there's lots of baseball purists who would argue, but.
Follow-up question. Because we're on the topic of rule changes, Joey Gallo. Minnesota has 3 home runs and only 7 strikeouts and a batting average of .278 this year. He has an OPS plus of .218.
And he's injured now.
But is Joey Gallo a good baseball player again? Did we legislate him into baseball, Scott? Is this all on the back of the shift, or is this... He's off the radar now. He's not in New York. He's not in LA. Does Minnesota count as a smaller market?
Absolutely, it does. And I mean, when he could just disappear in Texas, that was when Joey Gallo was at his best. As soon as he was in the spotlight in New York and LA, guess what? He struggled. There is such a thing as clutch. I know there's folks out there who would argue that, but Joey Gallo has never been clutch on these big market teams.
Fair enough.
It doesn't mean he's necessarily a bad player. And of course, small market teams need guys like Joey Gallo. Also, very small sample size, man. I'm not sold on Gallo's rejuvenating his career yet. It is a bummer that starting so well, he is now injured and on the IL. But good news for Canadian kid Edward Julien, who took advantage of his opportunity so far.
Joey Gallo, known for his strikeouts. Career high, 213 strikeouts, right? Laughably high in 2021. Aaron Judge, again, small sample size, but he is on pace for 237 strikeouts.
I think
is that Judge a problem with Judge, or is that a problem with baseball? Because for me, that's the glaring issue with baseball is that Aaron Judge is going to hit 50 home runs and 250 strikeouts.
Baseball set the market up as the most lucrative to the guys who hit the most home runs. And of course, if you're going to swing for the fences, you're going to miss your mark at times and take some K's. I think if you set the market up in the way you're going to make the most money being a high home run, a high strikeout guy, that's the way it's going to go.
Did you ever see the M. Night Shyamalan movie Signs with Joaquin Phoenix and Mel Gibson?
Where water saves the world.
Yeah, water saves everything. Stay hydrated. It was funny to me back then when like Joaquin Phoenix, the baseball slugger, the hero in his hometown, right? Set all these records for home runs, right? And then like his old high school buddies run into him like, oh, why didn't you like go anywhere with, you know, all that power? He's like, well, because I also set the record for strikeouts.
Yeah.
It's just like, if he was born 20 years later, he would be one of the all-time greats, right? So
that's right.
It's funny how times have changed, but I think it's just a good example of, yeah, where the things we've placed value on now, it's like, we don't care about strikeouts almost at all if you're hitting home runs. But it's a shame. It's a shame, Scott. All right.
One thing I will say before we move on here is that I have enjoyed seeing the plate discipline the Blue Jays have showed this year in comparison to other years. Their strikeouts are down as a team and as an organization. And whether baseball follows suit, it is cool to see the team we're cheering for not deal with the avalanche of strikeouts that you're seeing in other areas.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., one strikeout in the last 7 days. So not bad. That brings his season total to 3 through 51 at bats.
You love to see it, man. His recognition, his pitch recognition is next level this season, and you love to see it. All right. Expansion. It's coming. Major League Baseball is going to be expanding, and you know that's the case because you keep seeing MLB talking about where do you want to see the next team come. So the National Football League and the National Hockey League both already at 32 teams each. It makes it much easier for divisions, for just breaking down the math of scheduling. And those franchise fees. You know, Rob Manfred wants to sink his teeth into those billion-dollar franchise fees. So what needs to happen? Obviously, Tropicana Field is still a big question mark with the Rays, and Oakland is just a complete disaster with that Oakland Coliseum. We've been saying this for years. This has been what Rob Manfred constantly brings up whenever expansion is brought up, is that these problems within the league need to be dealt with. By problems, I mean Tampa Bay and Oakland before expansion. And this is why it's getting sticky, because where they want the franchise fees to come from is Vegas, right? They want that big, bad Vegas billion-dollar franchise fee. And then you know the other possibilities that they've mentioned are Charlotte, Portland, Salt Lake City, Nashville, and others, which I like to think means Montreal. And Vancouver.
Yeah, sure. Sure. There's, I would say, zero chance, not quite zero chance, relocation happens before expansion.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where I don't think so either, man. I think they're going to take the money and figure it out.
They need to. It's Las Vegas is for sure the next city to get a team. It's just, it makes too much sense, like dollars and cents. So Vegas is happening, and it's going to happen, I would say, soon. Like within the next 5 years, soon. And all this like public posturing about, no, we need to figure out Tampa Bay and Oakland before we expand. That's just a leveraging to drive the price up of whoever wants to bring a team to Vegas, right? Is like, if you were going to pay $2 billion to bring a team to Vegas, and you've got the $2 billion collected, and then Manfred says, well, that's all well and good. Thanks for building a stadium in Nevada, but we still got to figure out these relocations first. Okay, well, here's $3 billion then. Okay, fine. You can have a brand new team then, right? Like, it's that simple. And there's no way they can relocate any of like Tampa Bay or Oakland or whoever to Las Vegas, because that's their biggest leverage point for an expansion team. Like, once Vegas is off the books, Charlotte is not paying.
Yeah.
Like, they're just going to be like, well, okay, you have 31 teams. That's a dumb-sized league. Mm-hmm. Like, now Major League Baseball's lost a bunch of leverage in that regard. I know, like, but once that high water mark gets set of the expansion fee, and they go, hey, we just expanded to Vegas last year and it was $3 billion. So if you want to bring a team to...
Everyone's going to be clamoring to take the A's, right? They'll be like, yeah, just we'll take the A's.
I'm still not convinced that any relocation happens at all, but yeah, I do think that we'll probably see two expansion teams very soon. I don't know what the rules are around, like, how does that fit with the CBA? And if that's a factor at all, I'm sure that'll have to be. Mm-hmm. Does the MLBPA have any say in expansion teams?
They do not.
It was just an owner's vote.
In fact, if anything, it's
they should be in favor of it, right? Yeah, more jobs,
of course, because more jobs. Exactly. Okay, you get it.
I just thought maybe if there was, like, sometimes players' unions or owners vote against their own best interests only because they know the other side wants it so bad that they say, well, if you want that so bad, give us something in return, right? Like, let's install a salary cap. You know, let's install some things to get us to agree to allow you to have that thing you want so bad because we only kind of want it. I don't know. It's negotiations are so hokey. I don't know. Vegas for sure is next. Where's your best bet on number two? Not Montreal, right? As much as we'd love to see Montreal, it's not Montreal.
As much as we'd love to see Montreal, it's not Montreal. If there's any real hope in Canada, my thought is it's Vancouver. It just lines up on the West Coast far better. If Vegas gets the team that is an expansion team and then the A's still need to move or whatever. But this is the thing, is that the Oakland Athletics have such a storied history. It would be such a shame to see them leave Oakland just because the ownership sucks balls, you know? Yeah. Like, but
yeah. Okay. Whenever we talked to Anthony Telford, right? Longtime friend of the show. Played in Montreal as a player, made his family fortune as an expo. But he'll be the first one to tell you Montreal doesn't deserve another baseball team because they had one and they gave it up. If, and I'm not saying we do agree with them, let's just say that that is correct. Let's operate under those understandings. Does Oakland deserve a team at this point?
No.
So, like,
but this is unfair, I feel like, to say.
No, it's not, because I feel bad for the Oakland fan base, but also it's like, well, I don't know. I know it's not quite an apples to apples comparison, but if you're not showing up and supporting your team, yeah, you don't deserve to have one, I guess, is the argument that I'm going to say. If it applies to Montreal, I'm going to apply it to Oakland, and I'm going to have to say it's the same standard across the board. I don't know. I just don't think if Oakland relocates to Portland and then some new owner wants to say, well, I'll bring an expansion team to Oakland because those fans really deserve a good owner and a real team. And be like, what? Why are we going back to Oakland? Like,
yeah,
am I wrong about this? I don't know. No, as much as I feel bad for all 7,000 Oakland fans, you're not going to the games. It's too bad. So but sad, man. The Winnipeg,
the other side,
Winnipeg doesn't deserve an MLB team either.
On the
they
other
would get
side,
more fans out than Oakland would.
On the other side of this coin, though, dude, the big difference here is that Oakland proves time and time and time again that when there's a good team on the field, they show up. And a lot of this lack of fandom that is in Oakland Coliseum at this point is they have watched this front office every time they're a contender shy away from signing their players, sign away from having that culture where you've got guys. Like, look at the Jays, man. We can go out and buy a Gausman jersey. We can go out and get a Varsho jersey. We can celebrate the fact that George Springer is in the fold for the next 4 years. If you're a fan of the Oakland Athletics, unless they have a young stud come up from their system that catches fire, like they do time and time again, that is one thing Oakland has always excelled at, is player development. then you need to either buy jerseys of kids that you know are going to leave, but at least they're ARB eligible, not yet. They're not at ARB eligible, and they're probably going to stick around for a few years that way. Like, it's almost like a protest not going to the games. And I totally understand where that fan base is coming from. Montreal was a little bit different in that when they had big rallies for the team, they had like 300 fans show up. I remember it very well because I remember they had a rally in Montreal the same year they had a rally in Winnipeg to save the Jets. And the Jets had 100,000 people show up, just to put that in perspective, by the way. Winnipeg is 650,000 people. So they had like 20% of their population show up. 330 people showed up to the Save the Expos rally. And that was kind of when Major League Baseball was like, all right, stick a fork in it. It's done. But let's move on, buddy. We are getting long in the tooth here, and I got to get on the road.
Yeah. I'm just looking at like average attendance per game in Oakland versus Montreal, and it's like
similar.
It's 20-ish thousand up until the last 3 years in Montreal, and then it was around 10,000. And Oakland has been around, you know, between 17 and 25,000 forever. And then in the last 3 years has been under 10,000. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's all right. That's F the owner in Oakland. That's what I'll say. But besides that, let's end on a fun, happy note.
Yeah.
Is this a happy note? I mean, this is a fun story to talk about.
Listen, Bryce Harper is nobody's darling. Right. He came into the league. Everyone felt he was very arrogant, felt he was full of himself. There was a lot of hate put towards Bryce Harper in his Washington Nationals days. And then he all of a sudden became the most underrated. He went from probably the most overrated player in the league to the most underrated player in the league. Last year, he put that Philadelphia Phillies team on his back and pretty much was the driving force behind their World Series appearance. Tommy John surgery over the offseason, a real tough hit to the Phillies team. Surgery went well. He's already started to rehab. Now, the good news is that Bryce Harper, after Reese Hoskins wound up with that season-ending injury, decided that maybe first base is something that he could do. He went to Dave Dombrowski, the general manager of the Phillies. And he bounced this idea off of him. He knows that Tommy John surgery, you can't rush back from, but you can swing a bat a lot sooner and you can play first base, right? As long as you're not doing the Vladdy and firing it across the third base in that sort of scenario, you're pretty much, you're not throwing at first. So yeah. Bryce Harper was trying to find a way to get himself back into the lineup sooner. And he figured that playing first base would be very valuable to the Philadelphia Phillies, and Dombrowski agrees. So it looks like Bryce Harper is going to be taking a stab at first base. What were your original thoughts on this?
I loved it.
Initial thoughts.
Initial thoughts. All right. So I have a history with Bryce Harper. Most notably, he was the captain of my all face punch all-star team.
Yeah.
Most punchable face in baseball. He's grown on me since then. He's definitely, I mean, he has a edge to the way he plays, but I don't think he's an asshole, right? Like even when, I can't remember, was it the COVID season or the year after when he was hit by the pitch and like broke his hand,
mm-hmm.
just the way he's like arguing with the pitcher, like in a, like, I know that wasn't intentional, but F that, still, like, dude, come on, man. Like, I don't know. He's grown on me. I wouldn't say I'm a Bryce Harper fan just yet. He's no Kevin Kiermaier, but
I feel the same way, dude. I like Bryce Harper so much more than I used to. There's just a few things that he has done. The broken hand thing is a great example. Him just being such a team player, him being on the bench in
Like being a full-time Atlanta? DH last year?
Yeah. Like in Atlanta, when I don't know if you remember when the fan was yelling at him, Acuña is better. Acuña is better. And he turned to the fan and he's like, it's Acuña. There's a little thing on the end.
Yeah.
I just love that so much. Correcting the fan, heckling him.
Again, not an Acuña teammate.
Yeah. Right?
Like it's just, I don't know.
He's a team first guy, and you're really starting to see that out of him. And that's just very.
And he loves,
as a fan, how do you not love it?
Right? Like he loves baseball. Seeing him while he's recovering from injury, playing 90 games at DH last year, just to like, you know, clearly he's not at 100%, but you'll take his bat any day.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, if he's willing to move to first base, that's. He's not an old dude. So to have him moved out to first base, it's a pill to swallow, I guess. Maybe it's not quite. I like that he's the one approaching Dombrowski about it. I like that this is his idea. This is not Dombrowski saying, hey, would you mind doing this for us? It's the other way around. And I love it. I mean, he has two career games at first base when I'm looking at his baseball reference. I don't know the circumstances of those other than maybe it was a defensive swap mid game for all I know. But it is not an easy position. So there are going to be growing pains with him at first base, but he's also like super talented at baseball. So he'll make the transition.
Pure athlete.
Yeah,
for sure.
Do you think, is this potentially the end of his outfield career? Or is this just a bridging thing? Is this I'm going to play first until I'm healthy again, and then I'll move back to the outfield? Or is this, is it the Vladdy approach where it's like, no, I'm going to learn a new position and I'm going to be like Bryce Harper, Gold Glove at first base? Can you see that in his career?
No, but I can see him being a completely capable first baseman that just gives the Phillies more options to get his bat into the lineup. If he can play first and that DH spot can rotate and maybe he can play five games in the outfield a year. I don't think they have been shifting away from him being an outfielder for a couple years now. So I think that this is the end of it. For Bryce in the outfield. That said, a spot start here or there, or maybe you're shuffling the lineup around at the end of the game, right? It's the seventh or eighth, and you're trying to fit certain guys, certain places. Bryce could probably reasonably be put in left field and be fine for an inning or two, right? I think that's probably the route Bryce Harper's career takes from this point on. First base / DH, maybe the odd spot start in the outfield.
I'm going to see your zero gold gloves for Bryce Harper at first base, and I'm going to raise you one. I'm going to say he does. I think, look, here's the thing. He's 29 this year. I think his biggest threats, Paul Goldschmidt, Freddie Freeman. These guys are well into their 30s at this point. Could there be 6 years from now an NL without Paul Goldschmidt in which Bryce Harper has,
is that guy?
Has just done 6 years of learning how to play first base and he's that guy? I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's likely. I don't think it's crazy.
Vladdy did it.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy. All right, let's get out of here, Scott. I know you got to hit the road. Thanks for taking an hour this morning, an hour and a bit to talk baseball.
You know, I love it. We'll see everybody for Long Toss. That is happening live on Sunday. We've got Craig Ballard. We've got Hey Commie. We've got Chris Henderson coming on. And fingers crossed that Zoobs from Less Than Jays can join us, which would be his first appearance on Long Toss and would be a nice little addition. Thanks again, everybody. The Grounds crew, we appreciate you muchly. Hit that like button. Hit subscribe if you've yet. Tell a Blue Jays friend fan of yours that we exist.
There you go.
All the best, everybody. We'll see you Sunday.
Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osmer with a drive. Cheese and crackers. They chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.